coming. So, Wade, I wanted to first have a discussion of how everything got started with you and your practice at Ross and McBride and being a partner there.
Yeah, so I finished my articling in 2010 at the University of Toronto, and I came to Ross and McBride to article here right away. So this was my my first real job as an articling student and then as a lawyer, and it's where I've been ever since. I live out in the Niagara region and grew up in the Niagara region, so it was a bit of a commute to me for Toronto. So Hamilton seemed like the natural place to end up. And Ross McBride at that time, and still does, did some great employment work. And so I had connected with Ed Canning here. And I began my work in employment law and then quickly diverged off into human rights, where the vast majority of my practice is now.
Excellent. And talk to us about human rights and employment law and and how that's played a factor within your role in the community and how that is so important to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think given everything that's happening, with everything we've seen down south recently with the COVID-19 pandemic, I think human rights are just all the more important, Anthony. I think a lot of times, you know, when something happens in society, whether it's the pandemic, everyone will say, okay, we need to focus on finances and business and things like that. But it's at these times that human rights are more important, and they're not something that should just be swept to the side and ignored. So I came into Ross and McBride and I was doing some employment work, and I started seeing cases of, you know, an employer who had terminated an employee because they had a disability, or they were off work for 2 months because they had an operation or something and they had missed some time and the employer was upset, so they fired them. And I started getting kind of more exposure to that kind of stuff happening on a regular basis. And I thought there's a real need for lawyers in human rights, not just employment law, but to focus on human rights and to become, you know, almost specialize their practices in human rights. And so that's what I've tried to do. For me, it's always been about kind of the underdog, I guess, is a way to put it. It's about people who, you know, have something bad happen to them. And, they may not have on their own kind of the capability at that time of standing up and fighting, you know, what in some cases is our larger employers. And so for me, I always tried to be the person who positioned myself there to help them. To help them understand about the law, what their rights are, what protections they have from those employers, what can happen if they litigate their case, and also to offer affordable alternatives. Because the bottom line is for a lot of people, lawyers are out of reach. There's a real access to justice problem in Hamilton and Ontario and in Canada, where people just can't afford lawyers to help advise them of their rights and to secure what their rights are. So I've tried a lot over the last decade, Anthony, to think about those things and how I can shape my practice to be accessible to people while still kind of fulfilling my obligations to my law firm. But more importantly for me, it's always been about kind of trying to balance the power between a large company and someone who's experienced discrimination.
And then, Wade, what is it about helping people with disabilities and educating their voices and helping them expand their voices as well to be more of an advocate in this community?
I think that's important. I don't think there's enough of that work. There are organizations that do great work, like the Hamilton Community Legal Clinic, and they're phenomenal. They have great lawyers and they do excellent work. The problem is there's too much work to go around, so there's just not enough lawyers or clinics or other services to help people. So, you know, the way I see this, and I know not everybody agrees with me, but I see it as, you know, So I'm the first in my family, first generation of my family to go to university. I think I've, in the role that I'm in, I've been pretty privileged, and I personally feel an obligation to help and give back to the community in some way. And I do that through pro bono work. And I mean, part of why I focus on disability is because I think disabilities affect all of us, right? There's permanent disabilities, there's episodic disabilities. I have a niece who has a disability and she can't walk and she can't speak. And I've seen kind of the struggles that she's gone through. And so I just recognize this is an area of, you know, law and society that we all need to do more work in, whether it's as lawyers or as advocates like you, Anthony, and the great work that you do, or the legal clinic. So just for me, it's an area where there's a lot more work to be done, and I'm just trying to do my part in helping there.
Great. And how do you think we've progressed in terms of accessibility and inclusion in the community, in your opinion?
Honestly, I think we've made strides, but the problem is, I think when you make strides in any area of human rights, you'll always have a segment of society that pushes back and resents mm-hmm. that, whether they're in favor of not being politically correct or freedom of speech. You see it kind of push back in ways that they try to kind of frame it to be a little bit more appropriate than perhaps it is. But freedom of speech advocates, for example, when really they may have some other nefarious purpose. So my worry is with anything, Anthony, when you start to gain human rights and you start to make strides, whether it's accessibility or whether it's for the LGBTQ2IA+ community, for example, there's always going to be people who organize and push back against that. And so I think it's a bit of a pendulum. And I think you see the swing back. You see groups counter protesting. You see just what happened in the States down south is a good example of what you see amongst people pushing back and supporting, certain rhetoric and certain. So I guess what I'm saying is I think that we've made strides, but I also think we're seeing the counter push as well. And I think it's being more acceptable for people to oppose human rights as well.
And that's true. I mean, from my perspective, I've also seen the fact that when you push back in terms of the human rights and your needs, it's almost as if there's some form of an elitist kind of concept. Well, whereas a person with a disability can only attain a certain level or achieve a certain plateau and benchmark, and then level off, so to speak. Could you speak to that a little bit, Wade?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I struggle with this in the law. I'll give you an example. So in the human rights world, there's a human rights principle that if, let's say that somebody's hurt on the job and they can't do their position anymore, there's a duty to accommodate that employee, and an employer will have to look at other positions in the workforce. But it's always at the same level or below. It's never a promotion. And it's always been accepted that way in human rights. And that's an example that kind of, when you just made your comment, that came to mind for me, because I guess for me, why can't it be a promotion? If somebody's hurt and they can't do their job, but there's a position that's available that's a step up, why shouldn't there be an obligation to look at that? Why should it only be same level or below? So, people look at, and I think the policy principle behind it is that, well, if you have a disability, you shouldn't get something better for having it. Well, it's not getting something better. You can't do your own job anymore. You're looking at something that's suitable and fit. And why does it always have to be something that's lesser? So I take your point, and I struggle with that as well, Anthony, and I struggle with it in terms of different areas of law and how it applies. And it's something that I've kind of promised myself early on in my career that I would challenge where I was able to, that I would say to an adjudicator, why is it this way? And, maybe we need to rethink this. And maybe this policy principle itself is based on, some underlying discriminatory notion that we need to rethink or at least cast into the light.
Wade, we're going to take a short break, but when we come back, I'd like to take a more of an in-depth look of accessibility and inclusion from the way of the pandemic and how advocacy plays a greater role in our society today as part of COVID-19 and the pandemic today.
This is CIOI, 101.5 FM. The Hawk is on the air.
Move. Cut.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Manley, silver medalist at the Calgary Olympics. Back then, I couldn't imagine the toll Alzheimer's disease would have on my family. If we don't act now, more than 1 million Canadians will be affected within a generation, including people like you and me. We can stop this disease. Researchers are closer than ever, but it won't happen without your support. Please put your mind to it. Help fund the critical research of the Alzheimer's Society.
Visit www.alzheimer.ca or your local Alzheimer's Society to make a donation.
What do you want to do at recess?
I want to try new things and get my hands dirty. I want to speak up and say what I think. And I want to like myself, just for being myself.
By grade 6, many girls lose confidence, dislike their bodies, and more than half wish they were someone else. Help girls see the confidence, courage, and potential in themselves by going to www.girlsgrowthfund.ca. To a girl, it's the chance to know that she matters. For you, it's the chance to change a life. Brought to you by the Canadian Women's Foundation.
At Mohawk College, we believe that consent is everything.
If my friend tells me they've been sexually assaulted, the first thing I need to do is listen to them, understand the situation, let them know that I am trying to understand how they feel.
I think the most important thing is to not push them by any means, not make them say anything they don't want to, make sure they're as comfortable as possible.
What does consent mean to you?
For support or more information, students and staff can contact the Student Rights and Responsibilities Office, Security Services, Employee and Family Assistance Program, or Counseling Services at Mohawk College. Or in the community, contact Sasha, the Sexual Assault Center in Hamilton, at sasha.ca.
Mohawk College is launching its new Center for Entrepreneurship. The center will be hosting exciting events for students, alumni, and the community. The college's new center is committed to growing the entrepreneurial spirit and mindset, both in the classroom and out in the community. Mohawk has a long line of successful alumni entrepreneurs. If you're interested in what Mohawk's new Center for Entrepreneurship has to offer, check them out on YouTube. You can follow them on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Mohawk Surge.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
And welcome back to Above and Beyond, Bridging the Gap to Accessibility and Inclusion. Before the break, we were having a great conversation with Wade Posiomka, partner at Ross McBride, Human Rights and Employment Law. Wade, before the break, we discussed the pandemic and COVID-19. Really having an effect on people with disabilities. What would you say to that? And what would you say that COVID-19 has really done, challenged, and therefore provided also opportunity for people with disabilities once COVID-19 is over?
Yeah. So Anthony, I think COVID-19 and the pandemic has really turned everything on its head for employers and for employees. I think, you know, so you probably know I do a fair bit of employer work as well, and I enjoy doing that work because it gives me an opportunity to work with employers and to help them shape policies and practices in their workplace that accommodate people. And that's not necessarily because, I mean, it's in an employer's interest to accommodate the employees' disabilities as they arise. It's good business practice. It makes sense all around. You know, the worst employers and employers who often take the biggest financial hits in litigation are those that don't recognize that principle that, you know, we all benefit together. And I think what COVID did is it kind of highlighted maybe the disparities for employers that they already had and the gaps that they had in their policies and their workforce, because it caused employers all of a sudden to have this focus on, you know, economics, finances, basically survival for some companies, right? A lot of companies have gone out of business already and some are on the brink. So they weren't, you know, overly focused on human rights. They were more focused on survival and what can they do to make their workforce lean and be productive. And I think that what's important not to get lost in here is that, yes, while employers are struggling, think about employees who live, many of whom live paycheck to paycheck, right? They don't have the financial means. If they get laid off from work and they get EI, they're taking a hit, or they get CERB again, most are taking a hit in terms of their incomes. So for individuals, it's certainly, I would say, equally worrying or more worrying. And then, of course, I think there's a natural instinct. There's a tendency, at least with employers, to not want to accommodate or not focus on accommodation in many situations when they're focused on financial survival. And so for me, Anthony, what I did is with my employer clients, I would do bulletins. I would try to keep them up to date on, you know, different programs that are available to support their employees. There's things like work sharing, for example. So instead of an employer laying off one employee, where they can collect EI and they're going to get basically 55% of their salary up to a maximum or so, why don't you look at laying two employees off half-time and doing a work share program where they get topped up so they get 90% of their salaries, right? So I tried to look at that and give employers options, make it readily available to them that you can help support people during these difficult times. And, you know, I think for the most part, the employers that I work with come to me and use me as legal counsel because they want that kind of advice. They want to understand the human rights side of things. They want to be given proactive solutions to the problems that they legitimately are facing. And my advice is always to focus on accessibility as well, right? It's always to make sure that employees in the workplace, regardless of their needs, are supported where we can support them. And so I think it's a lot of proactive work because I think, Anthony, you know, some new employers came into me over COVID as well, and their instant knee-jerk reaction was, you know, we're in financial trouble. Let's lay all of these employees off. And that, as you know, and as everybody knows, that has a real effect on people. And so I just think that the problems that existed before are highlighted and exacerbated because of the pandemic. Right. And so, you know, more need for human rights, I would say.
And one of the biggest struggles for people with disabilities, pandemic or not, has always been transportation. Getting from point A to point B with respect and dignity in tow. Could you speak to that a little bit, Wade? And
yeah, I mean, I've seen a number of issues with transportation in and around the city of Hamilton since the pandemic started. And I think whatever area you're in, Anthony, whether it's transportation or not, you need people who see these problems on the ground to stand up and say something's wrong here. Because when you do that, whether you win or lose, you're drawing attention to an issue and you're giving someone an opportunity to change the problem. And you're one of those people, Anthony. I mean, I've known you for a while now, and I've known you as a community advocate. You know, you've seen that. You've seen that with DART's transportation. You've seen something that you believe is wrong, and it's not accommodating people who have disabilities. And you filed a human rights application, right? And I'm helping you do that. I don't think that's a secret. That's been out in the media.
Yeah,
and I'm hoping, and I'm hoping through that process that you and I, that I can help you make some proactive change for people who need it. And, you know, I know legal counsel on the other side, that's Jane Gooding, who's acting for DARTS and a very reasonable lawyer and a good person. So I'm hoping we can work together and achieve an outcome here that works for everyone. But I think the important point I wanted to make, Anthony, is that we need more people like you who are willing to stand up and come forward. And then people who will help them, right? People who have the legal knowledge who can assist as well. So I think that's important.
Well, and that goes hand in hand, Wade, with being able to find your voice and not being afraid to speak up and speak out to what you truly deserve as a person in this community, whether you have a disability or not. So, and I think, you know, with this filing of the application to human rights, I think we're starting that process of progression and not perfection. And I think it's important to acknowledge that. I mean, even as this pandemic started, when the HSR and DARTS collaborated, so to speak, where HSR was not providing service to persons with mobility devices unless they were provided with a companion, really wasn't, I guess, well thought through. Could you speak to that a little bit, Wade?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem, generally speaking. I think in terms of accommodation, sometimes there's decisions that we make quickly or that we don't turn our mind to the ramifications of them. And that's why, you know, advocates who come forward with complaints, especially in the public interest, are important because they cause people like DARTS or HSR to step back and think, have we gotten this right? Is there something we can do that can offer accommodation that doesn't impact our legitimate goals of running a business? So, you know, I think that's an important part to, you know, an important message that I wanted to kind of get out in the show today, Anthony, that people need to stand up and kind of raise their rights. And I know why they don't. And I'm not criticizing people who don't either. There's a lot of fear around coming forward. You know, how much is it going to cost me? Could I go bankrupt? Is this just a lawyer trying to make money? Are they going to target me because I've raised my concerns? Is it going to really make a difference? Or am I just going to be wasting my time? You know, so all of those considerations are there. And for the most part, a lot of the kind of public interest work that I do, I mean, I am a lawyer in private practice, and I do a lot of kind of a human rights and employment work privately, but I also do a lot of pro bono public interest work when I think it might benefit a lot of people in the community. And I know a number of my colleagues do that as well. So what I would say is that when you come forward, if you're an individual who, and you think you've experienced discrimination and you think it impacts a large number of people, approach a lawyer, have a chat, see if they might take that case pro bono or there's some arrangement that might work for you. And you know, you might be surprised that they will, and then they can talk to you about the protection that you have for doing that. If you bring a human rights complaint in good faith, or you raise a human rights allegation in your workplace or in an area of service, like a store, for example, if you raise something there, you're protected from reprisal or retaliation for doing that. So there are protections built into the law that people may not know about, but, you know, a lawyer can help you understand. And then we can talk about your goals. I mean, I think it's important that you come into a meeting with a lawyer, or if you're thinking about bringing a human rights application or raising an issue, think about what it is that you want to achieve. and what it is that you're worried about. And make sure you have that discussion up front, because lawyers will chat with you about that and you can work out a game plan most of the time. And maybe you decide it's not worth it for you to bring it forward. But I can almost guarantee you this: if you're experiencing a problem or if you see an issue with discrimination, there's probably a number of people before you have experienced who haven't said anything because they haven't had the means to, or they've been afraid. Things don't change until someone stands up and speaks out.
Absolutely. And it's, for me, it's always been about the importance of the respect and dignity and independence that, you know, regardless of disability or not, we all deserve as human beings.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And the duty to accommodate demands that, right? Part of the duty to accommodate is to offer accommodation in a way that respects individuals, grants them dignity, preserves their privacy to the extent necessary. Those are all important human rights principles. And so it's not just enough that you offer the accommodation, whether you're an employer or a service provider. Think about, you know, I want to offer the best accommodation possible, but I also want to make sure that it's preserving everyone's dignity in the accommodation process. And so that's really, that really requires a bit of work, right? Sit down and think about things. Don't act quickly and think about the right outcomes, because you're right, Anthony. Those are important human rights principles.
We're going to take our second break, Wade. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about dignity and respect and independence for persons with disabilities and everybody in the community.
This is CIOI 101.5 FM.
The Hawk is on the air.
I need to find home care for my dad. My husband can't find a job. Our fights hurt the kids. When you don't know where to turn, turn to 211, the helpline to community and social services in 150 languages. 211 is free, confidential, 24/7, and answered by friendly specialists. Dial 211 or search 211ontario.ca. 211 helps people find the right community and social services. 211, when you don't know where to turn. Supported by United Way, your local community, and the governments of Ontario and Canada.
I got a call at work today. They said that my fiancé had been in a car accident. He was hit head-on, and he's still in surgery.
For someone in need, you can be the difference between life and death. Do you really need another reason to donate blood?
Because they aren't sure they'll be able to save him.
You can save a life right now. Call 1-888-2-DONATE to book an appointment today. Canadian Blood Services. It's in you to give.
Hi, I'm Hannah Carter from your Hamilton Crime Stoppers. For over 30 years, Hamilton Crime Stoppers has helped solve crimes, put criminals in jail, and given closure to victims. So far, close to $1 million in reward money has been given out. If you have information to help solve a crime in Hamilton, contact Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS or submit a tip online at crimestoppershamilton.com. You can earn a cash reward up to $2,000 and you always remain anonymous. So please, if you see something or hear something, then say something.
SASHA, the Sexual Assault Center, Hamilton and area, provides confidential telephone support to survivors of sexual assault, rape, incest, child sexual abuse, and sexual harassment. Survivors and their support people can call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Men, women, and trans people are welcome to call the support line at 905-525-4162. Please call 905-525-4162. You are not alone.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM in Hamilton, Ontario.
And we're back talking with Wade Pozyomka, partner at Ross McBride. Wade, I wanted to, first and foremost, thank you for coming on the show today, but I want to also get your message to the community. I wanted to understand it from your perspective and your words, in terms of helping the disability community grow and be more confident to be able to act as advocates to promote collective prosperity.
For that, Anthony, I think I would say that, it's really important to stand up, because if you do stand up, a lot of bad things can happen. There's no denying it. Right. You could be targeted. You might not be able to afford to stand up. You know, you might fear for your safety depending on the circumstance and what it is you're standing up for. So there's lots of downsides to standing up, but until you do, we can't make change. You know, the lawyers in the community can't help you. Advocates in the community can't help you. So I think, you know, the best message that I can send across is to connect with one another. There's lots of good people in this community who want to do good work, who want to advance accommodation rights, disability rights, LGBTQ2IA+ rights, And so connect with people in the community. Let's continue to make connections. Let's work together to develop strategies. Each of us may have one part of the solution. There may be a legal part here from Ross and McBride and from me. Of course, Anthony, someone like you needs to stand up in the first place and say what's going on and what's wrong about it. So I think just standing up and challenging the status quo in many situations, right? We have a lot of things that we accept as norms that need to be rethought. And, you know, it's tough to do that when we're busy and we're all going about our lives and when we're in a pandemic and we have a million other things to worry about. But absolutely, I would say it's even more important now for us to do that. Think about the norms and the things that we do on a daily basis and think about whether they're right or if they need to be changed and what they're based on. And so, you know, make some trouble. And that's something that I really believe in. Challenging things and agitating in a certain way is important for social progress. So make some trouble.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to understand that change doesn't happen overnight. But if you don't take the approach to want to initiate change, then it'll never happen at all. But Wade, thank you so much for joining me on our show today. We really appreciate you taking the time to share your story and share the importance of access and inclusion, advocacy, and amidst the pandemic, and what people with disabilities and our community members can do to stand up. Thank you so much, Wade.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Anthony, and thank you for the great work that you and Cable 14 are doing with this show.
Much appreciated, Wade. So, guys, if you've liked what you've seen, I'd like to hear from you. Feel free to send me an email at goaboveandbeyondtv@gmail.com. I've also taken the opportunity throughout this process to chronicle my journey. So if you'd like information about my journey and the importance of advocacy and inclusion from my eyes, I've written a book entitled Above and Beyond. So you can reach me there at info@anthonyfrazina.ca. Like every show, we'd like to end with a special quote. So this quote comes from Wade through John Lewis, which states, "Never be afraid to make some noise and get into good trouble, necessary trouble." And that's from civil rights congressman John Lewis from the USA. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.
Put your hand in mine. As things change, we're growing strong. We'll rise above it all. Together with friends along the way, united with strength to face the day. We're together and now we're here to stay. United, we will be the change.
You're listening to The Hawk 101.5 FM, broadcasting across Hamilton from the edge of the Niagara Escarpment.